grew up in Russia. I grew up in the middle of nowhere. That little town had one amazing thing, which was an art school. When I graduated school, it was clear for me that I wanted to become an architect. We've been working with brands such as Dolce & Gabbana, Fendi, Bentley, Bugatti. We were probably one of the first ones who have recognized that trend, but it was so challenging, it was so demanding, it really made me re-evaluate, do I continue doing more of the same or do I start something of my own? My first project was a BRR. We learned the hard way on this first project. The luxury of our units is in the quality of space, is in the smartness of the design. We refinanced it. We got the valuation of nearly 900,000.
Oh,
so we actually broke the ceiling for the area. This lovely couple have been doing it for 20 years, but we just saw an opportunity to improve it functionally. On average, it's about £100 per room. I'm usually the person who talks the least of all. So I'm usually somewhere in the corner doing my stuff. I am actually being able to contribute and to give back to Samuel Leeds Academy. But definitely for me, it was a transformational moment.
Hello and welcome to Samuel Leeds Success Stories. Today I am sitting with a very good friend of mine and fellow coworker, Igor Fufichev. Welcome, Igor.
Thank you, Patricia.
I like to call Igor the architect. Are you using that nickname that I've given you?
You know what? I'm thinking about changing my Instagram profile.
Nice! Good. All right, great. So Igor just joined as our newest mentor, so we're very excited to have him join the Samuel Leeds Academy team. So I would really, really love to know a little bit about who you were back in Russia before this all kicked off. So your whole property journey and everything. I've seen you twice speak at the different inner circles, which has just been just huge value to all of the Academy members. So let's start in Russia, if that's okay.
Let's start in Russia.
Okay.
Who I was in Russia? Well, in Russia, I was a little kid, basically, because I grew up in Russia. I grew up in the middle of nowhere, in a small town where it can get very, very cold.
Oh, I'm Canadian.
Hello, stereotypes.
Hello, stereotypes.
But yes, it does get very, very cold where I'm coming from. And it was tiniest town, 20,000 people.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
The very basic school.
Yeah.
My parents were teachers at that school.
Oh.
There were only two schools in the whole town.
Yeah.
Everyone knew everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But that little town had one amazing thing, which was an art school.
Mm.
And that's where sort of my passion about art, architecture started. Because I guess I had some sort of a talent when I was a kid and my parents saw it. My teachers saw it and they sent me to the art school.
That's great.
And I've studied there for about 5-6 years. And when I graduated school, it was clear for me that I wanted to become an architect.
Mm. Wonderful. And an architect you became, right?
An architect I became.
And so from Russia, where was your next stop in the journey?
Well, first of all, I went to the university. I moved from my little town to a bigger town, which is sort of one of the biggest towns in Russia, but it's still in sort of in the middle of nowhere. It's more or less like Manchester of Russia. It's also post-industrial. It's in the middle of the country. It also does get cold. And it also has its own very particular cultural vibe around it. So mm-hmm. I did my bachelor's in architecture there. But in the same way as it was when I was a little child, I always felt like it was still not enough for me. I still wanted sort of more. I still wanted to, go to a bigger place, learn something new, go see the world, etc. So after finishing my bachelor's in Russia, I moved to Italy, to Milan. where I studied architecture as well, but for my master's degree. And I guess there is when everything sort of started to happen. I started working as an intern for an architectural firm back in Milan, mm-hmm. earning 300 euros per month.
300 euros per month?
I was earning 300 euros per month.
What can that get you?
Well, you'd be surprised. I mean, back then in Milan, well, if you think about it, I was getting a food card from the university for 5 euro per day, which I could spend in little cafes buying, you know, lunches and stuff. I was getting 300 pounds per month in my internship job. Yeah, I was doing some other works, you know, on the side, some architectural designs for, you know, my clients back in Russia. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was pretty good. It was absolutely happy time. Lots of fun. Yeah. Milan is a great city, great lifestyle. You don't need much money in Milan to actually enjoy your life. So yeah, it was fun.
And you're kind of in one of the centers of culture, history, art, 100%. Fashion, right? 100%, yes. So you're right in it. That's great.
Right in it, yeah.
And then from Milan, where did you go?
And then from Milan, as the company was growing, we started acquiring new clients, and the clients started to become more and more affluent. So the company grew, and we started attracting projects which were in collaborations with different brands. So,
okay, like what kind of brands?
At the beginning it was something small, but then it grew up into something really amazing. We've been working over the years with brands such as Dolce & Gabbana, Fendi, Bentley, Bugatti, Karl Lagerfeld, Loro Piana. And when I say working alongside them, I mean we were doing branded architectural projects with them. So there would be a developer who would be building, let's say, a residential tower, and the Dolce & Gabbana would be the branded face of the building. So it would be a Dolce & Gabbana tower somewhere.
So I just saw Samuel and Russell and Amanda and Anna and Sue and Tim in their latest video where they were talking about Dubai.
Right.
And they were saying, like, there's a Louis Vuitton rug.
Yes.
And it's kind of like beyond us that you can take these fashion brands and put them into property. So that's something that happens in other places of the world?
I think we were probably one of the first ones who have recognized that trend of branded real estate. We were not the ones who invented it. Mm-hmm. It was already started to happening, but we definitely were one of the first ones to actually bring it to such a big level. And now you can see Porsche Towers, Fendi Towers, as you said, Louis Vuitton villages, etc., etc.
Wow.
More and more companies, these fashion companies or automotive companies, started to produce or license their own furniture lines. Mm-hmm. So that's actually how it all started, from furniture lines, from, you know, couches from Fendi, Fendi Casa, or, you know, Bentley Home, again, line of furniture and accessories. And then gradually it grew to something bigger, such as real estate.
Mm, wow. And so when you were working these types of, you know, luxury brand projects, how lucrative were they? What kind of, you know, budgets were you looking at?
Oh, the budgets were astronomical.
I have no idea.
I don't even know those numbers in English. but it was very fun. It was very, very fun. It was very challenging and demanding, because when you work with the greats of the world, the great minds of the world, the great
designers,
the great marketers of the world, obviously you learn a lot, but it also is very challenging, because you have to deal with a lot of personalities, with a lot of egos, for the lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. But it helped me to kind of get a glimpse of what real estate can be, how beautiful, bizarre, amazing, interesting, scary, etc. it all can be. And Yeah, it was an amazing experience.
Wow, that's so cool. Okay, great. How long were you doing that? Like 5-10 years?
Well, I've been practicing as an architect for about 10 years. So mm-hmm. I've been studying for roughly around 7 years, mm-hmm. Bachelor and master's, and I've been working as an actual architect for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. And through my career, I worked in Milan where I started. Mm-hmm. I had a period of time where I worked in Moscow. Mm-hmm. I worked for a few years in New York, and I worked for a few years in London. So
great.
I was very, very lucky. Because as company was growing, new offices were opening, and I was always one of the first ones to join the new team, to go to a new location. So it gave me an immense experience, and also a chance to see the most beautiful places, the most beautiful cities in the world. Mm-hmm. So
New York City is one of it's my favorite city. And so moving from Canada with New York, just kind of like in the backyard, was New York and my mom. Those were the two biggest reasons, the biggest, hardest decisions to sort of drift off to start this life here in the UK with people like you and property. So, okay, great. So you travel the world, you're working with these huge brands, you're involved in some of the biggest, most beautiful projects, and I've seen them in your presentations at the Inner Circles, and really just sort of inspiring, awe-inspiring.
Oh, yeah, they're mind-blowing.
Oh, my goodness. And then you started to sort of take things into your own hands, or why did you make that transition?
Well, there was a point. I speak about it when I do the talks on the Inner Circles. There was like a tipping point. The last project, as I call it, which was an incredible project of a yacht club in Saudi Arabia, but it was so challenging. It was so demanding. It sucked my soul for several months. And though the project is, I still find it one of the most beautiful projects I've ever done. But after completing its project, it really made me re-evaluate where I'm at. What am I planning to do? Do I continue doing more of the same and keep pushing myself to create wealth and beauty for other people, for other clients? Or do I start something of my own? I'm sitting here, so clearly I chose the second.
Which did you choose? So you decided to put yourself first.
Yes, I would say so.
Good for you, Igor. Thank you. Well done. And that's, you know, that takes a lot of guts, right?
Yeah.
Did you have some hesitation? Was there a bit of a transition period where you weren't sure to pull the trigger?
There was, but very short.
Okay.
I'm the kind of person who needs focus. Mm-hmm. So I've tried doing two things in parallel, mm-hmm. starting with the property. I joined the academy while I was still working the day job. Mm. But I very quickly realized that either I do one thing well, or, you know, I do two things, you know, little bit sort of half-assed.
Yeah, you know what? And that's a really great point that you just brought up, because a lot of us, we want to try everything.
Yeah.
But what we need to do is focus. And like you said, focus and be an expert here first before you move on to the next one, right?
Well, I would not recommend anyone, to quit their job now and go focus on the property. Like I said, I was blessed to have some savings, so I could pull the trigger and say, all right, I have several months worth of, you know, life savings that I can afford to actually not work every day and mm-hmm. get a salary.
Yeah.
But I mean, if I wasn't in that position, would I still be able to do that? I don't know. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Simply because I just need to focus. Mm-hmm. on one thing and do it well.
Right. Great. Okay. So then what was your first project then when you joined the academy?
My first project was a BRR, mm-hmm. two service accommodation, buy refurbished refinance, rent, but under the rent, it was a service accommodation type of project. So my wife and I, who is my business partner and life partner, We bought a building in Oxford, a house in Oxford. I call it a building because technically it was no longer a house. It was previously a house that was split into flats, but it was split in a very weird way. It was not properly registered. Council recognized it as two flats, but it wasn't the same title. There were a bunch of things that didn't go well. So basically it was nearly uninhabitable unit where somehow people used to live a few years before we bought it, but it was abandoned for a period of time before we actually put an offer on it. Like I said, it was sitting on the market for a while because nobody wanted to buy it. It was no longer a house, and there was no way anyone could convert it back into a house because that would mean removing a residential unit from the market. And apparently there were no investors who were interested in taking on such a complicated project. I think we were the crazy ones who decided to go for it. We definitely did not know what was at stake.
Mm-hmm.
But we thought, yeah, fun, two flats, we can do a very nice couple of essays, serviced accommodations in Oxford. It's in a very good location, not far from the city center. Yeah, and we just went for it. It turned out very well. It is now very profitable. But obviously we learned the hard way a lot of things on this first project.
Mm. So when I first came here, I wanted to focus on a sort of a luxury level of serviced accommodation.
Yeah.
And I just found that maybe it's because I was in the Lake District, maybe because it was a 6-bed holiday let, I was attracting a lot of families. And so I wasn't able to turn the kind of profit. I wasn't able to get that juicy daily rate that I had envisioned.
Right.
At the beginning, 100%. Like when I first opened it after lockdown, it was booked at like crazy and people were paying an enormous amount of money for it. And then as people had finished getting out of that lockdown fever and they were allowed to fly, I wasn't able to capture that, you know, £600-700 a night rate
right.
anymore. And it had dropped. So how are you able to capture this, you know, luxury audience?
Well, I think luxury is a very strange term. I mean, I've seen all sorts of luxury in my professional career, and I've seen probably the most luxurious projects, and I've worked on the most luxurious projects. So when other people say luxury, I'm trying to be very careful with this word.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want the word luxury to sound like it's something exclusive and only for the few. Which was exactly the type of projects I've been working on as a hired architect. We like to call our projects luxurious, but from a different perspective. We think they are luxurious not because of the price point, but because of the quality of space that we offer.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't necessarily mean that we use the most expensive furniture or the most expensive finishes. By the way, we do pay a lot of attention to the furniture and the finishes and the materials and the solution. But the luxury of our units is in the quality of space, is in the smartness of the design.
Mm.
It's in the feeling that we want to create for the guests. So if you see our projects, they're all very much sort of Zen inspired. We think a lot about the fact that we live in a very noisy world, whether it's actual physical acoustic noise or visual noise or media noise or pollution, et cetera, et cetera. So we all live in a very, very, very noisy world today. So for us, the idea to create almost a sanctuary where people can come after a busy day at work or a busy day of exploring the city, and they can just come and exhale and relax and enjoy a perfectly functional, beautiful, smart, compact accommodation, and then really enjoy themselves, that is the luxury that we are aiming for.
And not only is it all of those amazing things, but it's also very sexy.
Thank you.
Dark, it's sultry, it's warm, it's inviting, it's relaxing. So yeah, very romantic spaces.
Well,
too.
We also try to capture sort of the spirit of the place, the Genius Loci kind of thing. Because the place in Lake District, our hotel in Lake District, yes, it is very dark. It's very, you know, moody. It's very velvety. You're wrapping you around in these dark tones. But the projects in Oxford, they are completely different. They're more urban feel, light, with lots of wood. You know, they're just, you know, image of good urban design without the excess noise of the surroundings.
That's really nice. And you're right. There is so much excess noise, isn't there?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So that's your first project. What were the numbers?
The numbers were not particularly great when you talk about, you know, the formulas, etc. But like I said, it was the first project. We had to learn, and apparently we only learn the hard way. So, I mean, the numbers are still good, but they're not maybe exemplary. We bought it for around 400. Mm-hmm. I think 395 was the price. Remember, it's a two apartments in one building. When we did our research, the cost of apartments in that area was 400,000 per apartment.
Oh, okay.
So we got basically two for the price of one.
Two for one,
but obviously,
baby.
it was very run down. It needed a lot of work. Plus, when I say we, it's my wife and I, and she's also an architect and a designer. So obviously,
perfect.
our minds, when they fly, they really fly.
So Natasha. She's lovely. I got to meet her when you spoke in Stratford.
Yeah, she's amazing. Mm-hmm. So we sort of decided to really go for it with this project. We really did a lot of changes. We basically left the front facade. And the rest was redone completely. So it was a very expensive project. It was, we probably severely overspent on the, now that I know that where we could have saved. But at that time, everything seemed logical to go for that expense. But we've done, in my opinion, still an amazing project. It's beautiful. It's top rated on Airbnb and Booking. The guests love it. It's almost fully booked throughout the year. So it pays off.
Yep.
But it was a big, big challenge. Lots of lessons learned. Mm-hmm. Lots of money spent, which shouldn't have been spent. But, you know, other than that, amazing learning experience.
Great. And then you refinanced and got...
We refinanced it. We got the valuation of nearly 900,000.
Oh my gosh.
So we actually broke the ceiling for the area.
So, okay. So you bought it for 400.
Yeah.
How much did you... how much was
around
the GDV?
Around 300 we spent on it.
So you're 700 in?
Yeah.
And its GDV was 900.
870. So nearly 900, yeah. 875,
wow.
I think.
Wow. Well, I'd say that's a really good deal. Why are you...
Well, yeah,
but... You're downplaying it, Igor. But it could have been better.
It could have been better, yeah. It could have been better.
Well, of course, your standards for yourself are so high. And then you use those lessons learned from that first project. And then you're stronger and smarter and faster and more efficient each time.
Yes.
What was your second project then?
Exactly the same. Well, nearly exactly the same house, also in Oxford. We were very excited once we've done it. We're like, yeah, let's do another one.
Let's do another.
So we found another rundown house. And we basically did very, very, very similar thing, but much smarter this time, spend much less.
Tell me the numbers. You gotta you're so shy. You're so modest. Okay, so
The numbers are, we bought it for 425, I would say. I think for 425,000. We spent about 100 on the refurb.
Mm-hmm.
So if you compare 300 to 100, big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar style. I mean, the same style, very similar spec. We learned a few tricks how to minimize the cost, etc. And the valuation came out at 650.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Another great deal.
Another good deal, yeah. And that project, it actually still has a potential because we have a garage at this property and there is still potential for development. We just never had time to actually go and apply for planning and do something else with the garage and convert it to maybe additional rooms or new accommodation or something like that. So there's still more to come with this project.
Would the garage fall under permitted development rights?
Not where we are because it's Article 4. The whole Oxford is Article 4, so there is no BD in Oxford.
Oh, okay.
In the Oxford city.
So for the garage, you would have to put in full planning?
Full planning.
Okay. What's the likelihood of getting approved?
I think likelihood is high, but it's just the hassle of getting all the surveys done, the flood risk assessment, the BAT survey, the famous BAT survey.
BAT survey.
So, yeah. But once we find time to actually do it, we'll do it. And
And then you're going to convert that, put that, in, make that into...
Yeah, we'll either add another room to one of the existing units or we'll create a separate unit. We'll see. We even thought about maybe, you know, splitting it and doing a separate residential dwelling there, like maybe a small house of some sort. So we'll see. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. And so are you doing title splits with these projects as well?
Yeah, we've done title split on the first project, not on the second yet, because the second project is basically a full house. Mm-hmm. But on the first project, yes, we split the title. Mm-hmm. Like I said, there was two flats already recognized by the council, but they were on the same title. Mm-hmm. And it was very messy how it was done initially, so we had to tidy it up. Basically, two flats were running from the same meter. Mm. I don't know how it was operated before, but we fixed it all. We brought the new electrical connection, new gas connection, separate meters, split the title. By the way, just splitting the title gained us 40,000 in value.
Wow.
Because we had it valued as both two flats on a single title and two separate flats, and the difference was 40,000.
Wow. I viewed two properties. Did I tell you about these properties? I feel like I've been talking to everybody. So I haven't viewed anything in years.
Yeah.
And just by chance, I happened to fall upon, not even looking for it, happened to fall upon one property, commercial with residential, that was for sale and for rent. Mm. And so I call and I'm like, how about a possible lease option?
Yeah.
And the agent was like, yeah, they would consider that. So I viewed that and then I'm like, what else do you have? Always the key question, what else do you have this? So she had something that hadn't gone on the market yet and they just finished the video. So I went to go view both of those the next day and both of those are potential title splits, right?
Yeah.
So it's just amazing. Is there any, is there any scenario where a title split wouldn't help the value?
Well, I haven't come across that scenario yet because in all the projects that I consider myself or viewed as a mentor for other people, it always seems like once you split the title, it significantly increases the overall value of the development. There may be cases where, you know, it's just the matter of the market where, let's say, flats are less valuable than houses. Mm. And I've had a couple of conversations with some agents and they would say, well, a four-bedroom house in this area would be worth more than two two-bedroom flats. Mm. And that makes sense. And it's just the market that dictates it. But I think it's more of an exception than the rule.
Mm, right. And that all just comes from doing your due diligence
absolutely.
And exercising all of the different options, right?
Yeah.
Great. So then that's your second project?
That's my second project.
What was your third one?
There were a lot of project that didn't happen in between. We nearly bought a land in London.
In London?
There was a land for sale.
There's land left in London.
There was there is land left in London, but apparently it was left for a reason. So it was funny project because it was an infill development. There was a terrace, row of terrace houses on one side, a row of terrace houses on the other side. And there was one gap with two garages, which would be perfect for a house. Mm-hmm. 200,000 purchase price in, what was the area? I forgot the area now. Anyway, not far from central London. Mm-hmm. It was literally a beautiful area. So we put an offer forward, offer accepted. We start the conveyancing and then we find out that under the property and under the land, the lot of land, there passes a cable, electrical cable, which obviously you cannot build on top of, but you can arrange to be removed and rerouted somewhere
else.
Oh,
really? And we're like, is that costly?
Well, we thought, well, how much can it cost? Like, you dig a trench, you put the cable somewhere else.
Easy.
Easy. So we reach out to, I think it was Southern Electric, one of those companies who does this major, you know, electrical works in the cities. And they came back with a quotation of 180,000.
Come on.
Yeah. So basically what needed to be done, not just to, you know, dig the trench and pull the cable out, but they would have to reroute the cable along the sidewalk around the entire sort of block, around the entire, you know, neighborhood, because that cable was apparently feeding electricity from this side to the opposite side of the street.
Okay.
So to now bring this cable to the opposite side of the street, they would have to go around, around, and around, because obviously you're in the row of terrace houses. And it's like, you know, 6 months long job or something, and you need to, you know, block two streets to do it. Mm-hmm. So immediately our dream of building a 1 million house in the city center of London on a land that was worth 200K immediately became impossible. So we had to pull out.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the whole idea, is just figuring out what's feasible and walking away from the deals.
Oh, yeah. Walking away from the deals is very important.
Yeah.
Because, yes, you disappoint the seller, the agent,
yourself.
Yeah. But it's important to be able to walk away if the deal doesn't stack.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've had a few of those.
So I'm waiting for you to talk about the one that you mentioned earlier.
You're waiting for me to talk about the hotel.
Yes, in the Lake District.
In the Lake District, yes. In the Lake District, we bought a hotel. That was official third project that happened, that did happen.
Okay. How did you find that hotel, by the way?
Rightmove.
Rightmove.
So here's the thing. People always say, oh, I cannot find any deals on Rightmove. There are plenty of deals on Rightmove.
There are.
There are so many
Every
deals.
Every day there's new deals.
Every day there's new deals.
Yeah.
But you have to be able to see past the numbers.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's too expensive. I cannot afford it. All right. We also could not afford to buy a hotel for £635,000, which it was advertised for.
Mm.
But what we could afford was to say, how about we lease it from you and we buy it in 5 years, which there is your lease option.
Lease option.
Now, again, things don't always go according to plan. And with this hotel, it was slightly different because we were implying lease option. The seller understood it differently and they didn't get the option part. So they thought, well, we thought you were buying it just in 5 years. So sort of like obligation to buy. Yeah. And there was a moment when we were nearly ready to exchange when this misunderstanding came apparent.
Mm.
And we had to take a break. Both sides, the seller and us. And
was it at the solicitor stage right now?
It was literally, you know, a couple of weeks before we were supposed to sign everything, to exchange, etc. So we were in complete, you know, understanding that we are doing lease option.
Mm-hmm.
They are thinking, well, we're just exchanging now and completing later.
Right.
So at the end we had to give way to the seller. We agreed to their terms. We exchanged the contracts. So it became delayed completion.
Right.
Which is a term not very often used. It's not very popular. It's probably a bit more popular in commercial property. Which means that we exchanged contracts, but now we have 5 years to pay them the rest.
Right. And you have to.
We have to. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Otherwise, if we pull out, we obviously lose the deposit.
And what was the agreed upon purchase price in 5 years?
Exactly the same.
635?
625. Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a great deal.
So same price. Yeah. We agreed now. We pay the deposit of 85,000.
Okay.
Which includes purchase of the business.
Mm.
So all the systems, all the bookings, the website, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
The booking.com listing, the TripAdvisor listing, etc.
Mm-hmm.
That includes all the fixtures and furnishings. Mm-hmm. So we got all the beds, the bedding, the furniture, mm-hmm. and the building. So deposit for the building. So now we are still paying the lease monthly to the previous owner, mm-hmm. but technically we are now owners. Well, at least, you know, we exchanged the contracts and now we have 5 years to complete on this hotel. Why is it good? Because we now have 5 years to build books, mm-hmm. to build a business, to increase the revenue, mm-hmm. And to, by doing so, to increase the actual market value of the hotel.
Yes.
So by the time we are ready to complete, we can easily get, well, we hope we can easily get the commercial mortgage, mm-hmm. on it, and there will be a lot of equity left in the property.
That sounds amazing. I have 100 questions still, yes. about this project. So you took over the existing business.
Yes.
What is the name of the hotel?
Cambridge House.
Cambridge House. That sounds really nice.
It's not in Cambridge. It's Windermere.
In Windermere.
Because there is apparently also a Cambridge House in Cambridge.
Of course there would be. There's probably Cambridge houses everywhere.
Probably.
Right?
So that one is Cambridge House, Windermere. A bit of a, you know, mouthful to try and say it and spell it out, but
yeah. Is it the only Cambridge house in the lakes?
I think so.
Okay,
yes.
Well, that's good, right?
Yeah.
And then how far of a distance are you from Lake Windermere?
So we are right in the city center of Windermere town,
okay,
which is about 20 minutes from the neighboring town, which is called Bowness on Windermere.
Yeah.
Which is on the right on the lake. So yeah. About 20 minutes by foot. Downhill.
Did I tell you I had a rent-to-rent in Bowness? It was a nine-bed hotel,
okay.
with views of Lake Windermere,
nice.
Just right in the heart of everything.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I love Bowness.
It's so
beautiful. Leah and Elliot came up with the kids and we spent time kind of wandering through as tourists, right? And it's amazing, the millions of tourists that come through that area a year. So it really is a gold mine. What kind of condition was Cambridge House in when you purchased it?
You know what? It's been in good condition. Mm-hmm. It's been in good condition. They, the previous owners, have been running it for 20 years. It's a very typical scenario, actually, from what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm.
A couple who bought this place many years ago. With a dream to build, you know, a hotel, mm-hmm. Or to operate a hotel, and they've been doing it, and they've been cooking breakfasts,
yeah.
Doing changeovers, yeah. doing maintenance,
physically checking people in,
greeting them, assisting
showing them where everything is,
exactly, giving them the suggestions which cafe to go, which hiking route to take, etc., which is lovely. I mean,
lovely.
I have nothing against that,
yeah.
But obviously, it is not a very scalable business.
Right.
Well, it's hardly a business at all because you have to be there physically all the time.
Right.
And there are so many examples of it. So this lovely couple have been doing it for 20 years. They have invested their hearts and souls into this property. But obviously, it was becoming less and less sort of up to standard with the modern aesthetics, with what modern travelers want. So it kind of slowly became old-fashioned, if you know what I mean. So it could have been operated the way it was. There was nothing wrong with it, but we just saw an opportunity to obviously improve it functionally.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't do the in-person check-ins and mm-hmm. check-outs. We live 5 hours away from the hotel, so would not be sustainable for us.
Uh-huh.
We don't have anyone on site. Mm-hmm. There is no receptionist. There is no one who greets the people,
mm-hmm.
The guests who come in. Instead, we have a smart system of mm-hmm. smart locks, of digital locks, where people can self-check themselves in, mm-hmm. self-check themselves out. Yeah, we're always you know, on call if anything is needed, but it's completely autonomous, self-contained, Just a different business model.
What was the average daily rate before you took over, and what is the average daily rate now?
We increased it by about 15%, mm-hmm. 10-15%. I think on average it was something around £100 mm-hmm. per room. There are different sizes of room, but mm-hmm. on average it's about £100 per room. We now looking at roughly 115, 120 sometimes.
That's really good considering you don't offer breakfast.
No. But nobody offers breakfast anymore.
Nobody.
Mm-hmm. After COVID, things changed a lot. Right. Many people just never reopened their, kitchens, which was exactly the case with this hotel as well.
What are you doing with the kitchen then?
Well, we are waiting for the season to be over. Mm-hmm. And then the kitchen, the breakfast room, mm-hmm. and the original owner's accommodation. Oh, right. By the way, the owners used to live on the premises, of course. So those areas which are currently not being used will be converted to more rooms. Mm-hmm. So we will go from 7 rooms to 9. Mm-hmm. And this additional 2 will be not just hotel rooms, but will be apartments. So
they
will be suitable for, longer stays,
right.
for bigger groups of people, etc.
That's great. Oh, I can't wait till that happens.
Yeah.
Okay, wonderful. I found that when I was involved with this other hotel, the Berry Boutique, parking was, a rare commodity, and they wanted us to, it was also a self-check-in. They wanted to see where can they leave their luggage while they check out and continue exploring before the train. What are your solutions for things like that?
Well, parking is a problem. We don't have parking on the premises. We are lucky that a street, just one street away from us, there is a free street parking.
Mm-hmm.
2 minutes in other direction, there is a paid public parking, mm-hmm. a big open-air public parking, mm-hmm. Which costs like £2 per night, mm-hmm. so it's very affordable. We just direct people over to one of those locations. And as far as the luggages, yes, we've had requests to leave luggages for longer. So far, we've been able to accommodate it just by advising people to leave it in the room. So the cleaners mm-hmm. would still come in, do the cleaning.
Yeah.
And then we just ask the guests to pick them up before the next guest checks in. Mm. And everyone so far has been understanding.
Wow, the trust system. I love it. Yeah. Did we go through the numbers then? So it's a delayed sale.
Delayed sale, delayed completion.
How much have you put into it so far?
We put in 85.
85K, right. That was your deposit.
Deposit, business, and furnishings.
And then in 5 years' time, if everything runs as expected, what would be the new value for
this hotel? Well, we based on our calculation, it's going to be north of 900.
Wow. Amazing. I can't wait. We'll have to have a big party there. Actually, we're trying to organize a party now there, aren't we?
Well, we're going to try to have a small party there because it's a small hotel, but we'll have fun anyway. Yes.
Yeah. We'll just grab a few people. Mentors, right?
Mentors, yes.
So you were asked to join the Samuel Leeds Academy mentor team, which was amazing. And that happened days after being invited to the property portfolio 10 million pound bus tour.
Well, that's actually when it happened.
That's when it happened. Okay. So Igor and I were invited to join this bus tour, which was amazing. And actually, that's the first time that we got to know each other.
Yeah.
And it was so much fun, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Good fun. I can't wait to see
the documentary. I know.
It's coming out soon, right? In a couple of weeks.
A couple of weeks. So we'll be able to see that. So actually, by the time this airs, the documentary, we would have seen it, right?
Great.
So that's great. So what has it been like joining the team then?
Wow. So joining the team has been amazing. Because
of me?
Because of you, first of all. Now I get to spend much more time with you, Patricia. Well, not really, because we barely see each other, but...
I know, we're working so hard.
But, for those who know me, and you got to know me a little bit, I'm usually the person who talks the least of all. So I'm usually somewhere in the corner doing my stuff. I'm not, in the middle of conversation. And in general, maybe it's a language barrier or something like that. I always found it difficult to speak to people, to network, etc. So for me, it was a challenge to just put myself there and say, all right, for a few hours every day, I'm not just going to talk all the time. So definitely was a challenge, but I hope I'm right and I'm correct in saying that I am giving some value to people who speak to me, and I can hear from many people thanking me for, you know, for advice and conversation, that I am actually being able to contribute and to give back to Samuel Leeds Academy, which taught me so much, and now I'm giving back to the community. I still do book my own mentoring calls with other mentors.
Me too.
Yeah. So you always learn. There is never a point where you know everything. So you always have someone who is smarter, who has done something before you have. So yeah, but definitely for me, it was a transformational moment from being, you know, a quiet guy in black, in the corner of the room to being able to help people in the academy.
Yeah, and what a feeling it is, right?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like all of the mentors, they just love it so much, giving back, paying it forward, making sure that the academy members have the support and the knowledge that they need, because it's scary. I mean, we don't have an architectural background like you do, so coming into this is completely, like, from the dark, right?
Well, that's what exactly kind of the whole angle, because when Samuel and I got talking on the bus tour...
When you were going to buy a Lloyds Bank together,
I think. Yeah, exactly. I think it was one of those moments. Yeah. Let's buy a bank and let's become, let me become a mentor. No. So we get talking and we're like, okay, so we have, you know, the accountant, the solicitor, you know, this and that, but we don't have architect in the academy, and we're talking about real estate. Like, I mean, architecture in real estate is like that.
Yep.
And so, that's how it happened. We thought it was just a perfect, you know, perfect niche, perfect void to fill, perfect gap to fill.
Definitely.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and we are so lucky to have you
Thank
here.
You. Thank
so
you,
what are the next projects you have on the go then?
Oh, yeah. So look, we as you probably, you know, kind of already understand from my whole sort of life story that I was telling you about, I always look for the next step, you know.
Yes.
What's next? What's bigger? What's, you know, the next step on the ladder? So we're looking at block deals now. Big block deals, you know, 5, 10, 15 units, apart hotels that can be converted into apart hotels, block of flats that can be converted to apart hotels, et cetera, et cetera. The whole apart hotel idea, I think, is just amazing, because it's kind of best of both worlds.
It really is. Yeah. Okay. Wonderful. So are you aggressively looking for the next project then? Ooh, okay.
Well, I'm not looking, because I am horrible at finding deals.
Oh, I'm really great at it. We'll talk
Natasha
later.
Is great at finding deals.
Great.
So Natasha, who is not here.
Natasha
is great at finding deals. She just has a gift.
Yeah.
I could spend days on Rightmove, or, you know, in general in on internet, and not find anything. She just walks in, opens laptop, bam, there's a deal. That's how we found all the first three deals that we've done.
Amazing. You should give her a sourcing fee.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you so much for spending time with us here. It
has
honestly
been a pleasure.
It is. I mean, we met in May, and now we're in October. So in 5 short months, we've become very good friends.
Yes.
I respect you immensely.
Thank you, Patricia.
I'm so glad that you're
it's
part
very
of this
mutual.
Team. Oh, thank you. So I'll see you later on at the dinner. I'm sorry the 4-dayers are done, but we're going to continue staying in touch, and I'll see you at the monthly dinners in London when they happen here. Right? You're going to have to come up to Birmingham. That's where I'm stationed.
I will.
You will. And I'll see you at the Inner Circles, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, great. Wonderful. Any last words of advice for our viewers here?
Take action. Action is much more important than thinking. Thinking is very important, but action is that much more important. So you have to take action.
Yeah.
Don't overthink. Just do it. You learn as you do it. You learn much more from doing it than from watching online courses or speaking to other people. Just do it.
Just do it.
Yeah.
Nice. I like that. Nice and simple and super true. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Igor.
Thank you,
it was a real honor sitting
pleasure.
Down. Thank you.
Thank you.
So if you found some value in that, in this interview with Igor, picking his architectural brain, please do like, subscribe, share, and comment. And then let the algorithm out there bring more people in front of Igor so that we can all take a chance on ourselves. Sign up for a BWP, a virtual course through samuelleeds.com. Get yourself educated, and we'll see you next time. Thanks, Igor.
Thank you, Patricia.